This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9 is 26th of September. It's a Thursday, right?
Thursday.
Yes, 6 a.m. I'm Julian Ng with Wong Chow Ning and Sharit Abdullah. And thank you for joining us. How are you guys this morning?
Good, Julian. Not too bad. Enjoyed yesterday afternoon having a walk with my kids. It's finally clear blue sky for a while.
Yeah, the API reading is like slightly below 100 or thereabouts is 100. It's so nice actually to see blue skies.
And temperature wise, it dropped. So I like, you know, it was really nice and breezy. It was good.
You still sound sexy with your voice, Johnny.
I don't sound like a 5-year-old anymore. It's the only moment in my life I feel like I sound
Did
like
you ever
an
sound like a 5-year-old?
That's the voice in my head, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
In my head. But it's quite nice to sound like Bonnie Tyler for a few days.
Yeah.
Let's
just
hope this...
Just please don't sing.
No, I can't sing.
Well, yeah, how about you, Julian? You had a good evening yesterday?
Actually, I spent the whole day yesterday napping. So that was good.
Yeah, it was nice. It was nice and cool, I'm sure.
The simple pleasures in life, right?
Simple pleasures, yeah. If I didn't nap, I would be watching cat videos on YouTube. So anyway, what have we got today?
Well, speaking about cat, we've got a new cat logo coming up for Proton. So I think it's the sixth iteration they've introduced this time around, moving on from star to moon. And so I guess... It's just all this focus on logos, right? Is this what the national car is all about, right? And wondering whether or not the focus should be on the economics of, you know, building a car rather than a logo. So yeah, let's look into that.
And then we'll be moving on to something a little bit more heavy, because are you thoroughly confused by the American political system? I am. I mean, they operate on a total different system, right? They even choose their president based on this electoral college vote. And then, so what we're going to do is we're going to try and digest the impeachment process, because that's just been hogging the headlines.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Started yesterday by Nancy Pelosi. If you want to join in the conversation, you can WhatsApp us at 0187-89-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd love to hear from you. And coming up next, we'll be talking about signs that you have achieved financial maturity. So stay tuned for that. And here's Crying by Aerosmith, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're with the Morning Run, Julian Shouning and Sharit with you. And that was Aerosmith with Crying. And we're looking at a story from The Guardian, signs that you've reached financial maturity. I think having gone through some of the items on the list, I think this is about emotional maturity as much as financial maturity, actually.
Yeah.
So like not lending your friends any money immediately on impulse, thinking about it.
Yeah, and having emergency fund that doesn't consist of that 23 euro, well, over here is euro, but I'm guessing it's more than that, at least for us in the Twix. Emergency money was something that I was worried about when it comes to, during the start in my 20s, just thinking about whether if there's an emergency that's happening back in Malaysia and I was way far away, and look... When something happens, you don't want to be asking for money. You just want to have that money available and just shoot off. Something that I was worried about. I never did have something on the side.
So have you achieved financial maturity then, Sharit?
That was my question.
Well,
do you still worry about your emergency funds?
No, I don't. I mean, not like how I used to be when I was in my 20s. I think I'd have a decent amount to do something.
Yeah, that's why I think this whole article, which is actually based on this Zopa survey, some of the signs of the original Zopa survey do make sense. I mean, you things like you have a pension plan, you shop around for the best deals, you use loyalty cards, you have a rainy day fund that emergency fund. It does make sense, and everyone should kind of work towards that.
Mm.
But I think some of it is, of course, not so easily achievable when you just start working, right? Because honestly, whatever you earn, you can barely make do, you know, and get to the end of the month. But I guess the point is you have to start somewhere and start having, even at that early age, have a bit of a financial plan.
Yeah, interestingly, this survey actually declares that you arrive at financial maturity at age 31.
I don't know how they got to that magical number, though.
Yes.
Maybe at 31, you do earn a decent salary.
Maybe in the UK.
And you kind of wisen up as to what you should and you shouldn't do.
Yeah.
And you've listened enough ringgit and sense, maybe, in that sense. it takes time, right? I mean, the whole financial... maturity or financial literacy. There's just too many. There's just a lot of component that makes up what, you know, what makes financial literacy. And I think it just takes time for you to digest every single facet of it, every single aspect of it. And I think by 31, you understand what savings is about. You know how to plan, and you understand what budgeting is all about, because you have an understanding of what life requires of you. I think before that is just starting off work after uni, a lot of things parents were used to pay for you, and you realize that after that you have to start taking responsibility. You start feeling guilty.
You know what? From the days of old, right? And I'm already a very old guy, but older than me. From those days, right? How people achieved financial became rich, or at least achieved financial stability, is when they don't spend.
Yeah, they save every penny.
Single penny, right? Yes. Every single cent there is, and they after a few decades, they find that they have more money than they can spend, and that gives them the emotional comfort. And the key to not spending is really to temper your own animal spirits, right? It's really all about not allowing yourself to go insane, to go crazy, to buy that next pair of sneakers or shopping bag, or handbag, right? And that's the key, I think. You look at this entire list, it's all about that. You know how to make your own meals. You have life insurance. You shun expensive fashions and trendy clothes and things like that.
Yeah, so that delayed gratification, right? I mean, one thing I've realized, you know, how some people manage to achieve that is that I remember having friends who used to know what they want at a very young age, you know, and that I think helps with the whole delayed gratification. They know what they want, like in the future, way ahead, and then they know how to hold back. But I think that a big number of us, I mean, at least for me as well, I was still trying to save the world when I was 20 years old. That's at least that was the ambition, right? And I put aside money, monetary ambition was on the sideline. So I was still trying to figure things out. And that, I think, didn't help, at least in terms of, you know, delaying gratification. Because when you don't know what you want, you don't know what you're saving for.
You didn't have a target. So the important thing is to maybe start with the target, what your intentions are, and then work towards it.
So it was much till later that I started.
Yeah, it does make sense. I guess the first step is to decide what you want, right? What kind of financial stability you want, and work towards it, because otherwise you wouldn't even know where to begin. I mean, other simple tips people say is like save 10-20% of your salary every month, put it aside, you know, as much as you can.
Yeah.
And then have at least 3 to 6 months of your pay as your emergency funding, which I know when you're 20s may be a little bit difficult, but you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, just build it up from 1 month to 3 months to 6 months. I think 6 months will be very comfortable. 6 months expenses, that is not necessarily your pay. I mean, if your expenses are half of your pay, that's great, right? It's easier to establish. All right, tell us what you think. Do you think you're financially mature, or do you think you ever reach that financially mature age? WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up next, we'll be discussing the impeachment process. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, This Too Shall Pass by OK Go. You're with Morning Run, Julian Shaoning, and Sharit's with you. So Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the House of Representatives in the United States, has decided that she would open up impeachment process against President Donald Trump in the United States. And this is linked to that deal where Donald Trump was trying to pressure Ukraine into investigating political rival Joe Biden in exchange for aid. So Donald Trump was trying to use his office to improve his re-election chances. And, you know, that's a very naughty thing to do. It's basically not legal. But there is some confusion about what impeachment means, right? It basically doesn't necessarily mean a removal from the office.
Or being sacked automatically.
Yeah.
Because there is actually quite a long process, I think, that works behind impeachment.
It doesn't help. I think that the processes are not clear, the standards at least. Processes probably is clear, but the standard, I mean, it says that, looking at according to this article, that the Constitution does not specify many standards or making impeachment removal as much. It's more of a question of a political will, if there is political support, isn't to go ahead with this process, rather than actually looking at the legal aspect of this of the issue.
Actually, is pretty legal and is a measure of checks and balances. So you can open up an impeachment process that would attract all the moving parts of the legal checks and balances. So the people would have to decide, committees would have to decide whether this should even go ahead or not. And if some select committees have decided that it shouldn't go ahead, then it wouldn't even reach the day of light. But even if that is decided, it goes ahead, Donald Trump has to go through what is seen as good as a trial, right? And a trial may either find him guilty or not guilty. If he's guilty, then he would be impeached, and then he will go through a legal process whereby he has to be removed from the office.
Well, to be fair, there have actually been two presidents who have been impeached. He's not, you know, this is not something new for the American politics. So we had Andrew Johnson's in 1868 and even Bill Clinton in 1998. And they were both ultimately acquitted and actually completed their terms. The only one who actually, I think, from the threat of impeachment that did resign was Richard Nixon. So there was never any impeachment for him, though.
Okay, so the trial that we're speaking about here, I mean, it's not the typical trial that we normally see in courts, isn't it? I mean, we're speaking about the different levels that exist within the U.S. House of Representatives. So it goes through the House, and then after that, once you pass that stage, then it goes to the Senate. So it's more of facing your colleagues. So they will pass a resolution whether or not they think, again, it's a political will, whether they think that you... you're guilty or not. And then it goes, so at the moment, looking at the, you know, just looking at just who's representing the House at the moment, it's the Democrats, and then after that is the Senate. So we could see how there is a chance that what Pelosi is pushing forward could potentially go through.
Actually, there is an opinion piece in Wall Street Journal today suggesting that instead of impeachment, there could be a better way, which is that the House could formally pass a resolution to censure the president. This, again, has precedent in 1834, where President Andrew Jackson was actually censured for withholding documents related to defunding a bank in the United States. And so I think that the purpose of this is really just to have an official black mark for Donald Trump. And that is very significant, because if he goes and run for the election, campaigns for the election to have a second term for his presidency, you know, his opponents can say you have been officially censured. Rather than you have been officially impeached but found not guilty by certain committees, right?
But this is Donald Trump, right? So I'm going to digress a little bit, you know. I don't think it makes a difference to him personally and in his campaign.
He's too thick-skinned.
Yeah, he's too thick-skinned, and also maybe his loyalty base just don't really care. I mean, he didn't deny he had this conversation with Ukraine. He just blamed everybody else. So this morning I listened to his press conference and he said, no, what we're doing with Ukraine is great. You know, he's a great guy. He's the best guy ever.
My best friend.
And you know, you guys, what he does is he diverts attention. He says, you guys should investigate Biden and his family. They've been taking money out of Ukraine. They've been taking money out of China. So that's his tactic. I don't, he as far as he's concerned, go ahead, do what you want, but I'm just going to distract everybody. But I think what is good about the American system is this check and balance, right? Whereby the House can actually bring up something like this. Yes. That there is freedom to do that. And on the background also, you have the freedom of press to push these up, you know, to push news like this through, which I think is important.
And also, you cannot simply just say things against the president, right? The president himself is a citizen of the United States, and he also has constitutional rights to defend himself. So that check and balance is very important.
Yeah, which sometimes when you look at Malaysian politics, you
simply say one, right?
Yeah, you simply say. And then we don't seem to have defamation lawsuits flying around so much, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so even though that the House is, I guess, dominated by the Democrats, it's still their integrity that's going to be questioned, right? They have to run this, you know, fairly, and they have to listen, and they have to look into the case. But again,
it's, and then there's a second stage, right?
Which is going to be the Senate, which is dominated by the Republicans, and again, their integrity would be in question as well. And whether or not, with amongst the Republicans, whether President Trump himself, he has, you know, he's popular amongst his own teammate,
and
that has been in question, isn't it?
And you need 2/3 of the Senate to actually push for a conviction. So you still need your own party members to cross, cross party lines to vote against you. So it's, if it happens, I'll be, you know, quite
surprised. It's an uphill task, actually.
Yeah.
It's an uphill task. We hear of Republican members, actually, they don't like Trump. So they are the ones who might vote against Trump. It can't be denied that President Trump himself, through arm twisting or through genuine support or whatever, he has his own, factions of support. But I think it's important, this is very important, because Donald Trump has, a very negative effect on world growth, on the environment and so on. So this is a very important matter. All right, we're coming up to the 6:30 news, and we'll be back with more discussion after that. And in the meantime, here's Me and Michael by MGMT, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Morning Run. You're with Julian Shaoning and Sharitz, and that was Magic Bus by The Who. And Proton has a new logo, and Proton has been in the news for a very long time, simply because they were part of almost failed national car project, and then they were revived by giving almost half of the stake in Proton to a Chinese company called Geely. So Geely is in the driving seat of Proton right now, no pun intended. And out of this, we're seeing a new logo from Proton, which looks like a Thundercats logo, if any of you can remember that cartoon TV series.
I do. And apparently it's supposed to help them move forward. So it's trying to make them, if you look at the logo, I guess it's a bit more neutral in some ways, trying to make it more appealing internationally. I think that, I guess, states the ambition. I mean, previously they've attempted, didn't quite do so well. But now, whether with Geely's help and with this logo, they can do that. So I don't know. I mean, we hear that the sales of cars have waned by a bit. I mean, especially considering the baseline was low last year. And whether this is one way as well to sort of spur up interest again, or, you know, what is with this logo? I mean, why is it going to be the thing that's going to sort of push a Proton forward?
Yeah, do you buy a car just based on the logo, though? I mean, unless the logo is really, really stupid and something that drives you nuts, right? Do you actually really care so much? And I think the logo looks okay. I mean,
it's nothing wrong there. But it's going to change the whole facade of the car as well. I mean, once the logo changes, the shape of the car could change as well as a result. That it's going to sort of evolve around. It's going to evolve around the steering wheel, could change. But the question still remains, for me at least, is that this national car is still not out the car that we built. Is still a rebadging exercise. Whether that is where, that would be where I'm interested to see where Proton put their focus on.
I think that's the most relevant thing, because Proton was the brainchild of Mahathir, whose intention was to create an industrial base for Malaysia back in the 80s when industrial bases were still relevant, right? But we have entered into the information age, and things are not as tangible as we have known them before. Really, things are in your mind right now. It's all about information. It's all about the knowledge resource that a certain nation would have. And Proton has practically failed at this, right? There is no real industrial base that's set up around Proton, right? There is a Toyota City. Is there a BMW or Mercedes City in
Yes. In Germany.
There is the Detroit Rust Belt, which has also died. And in Malaysia, you know, Proton in Tanjung Malim, I don't know whether that is an industrial base for Malaysia. So this rebadge is, and this rebranding is really much ado about nothing.
Well, I don't think it's completely failed. We have a group of Malaysian auto supply makers who have come up together with Proton and now also make for other auto car companies in the region. So it's not been a complete failure. Mm-hmm. But Proton itself, yes, I think there were issues about it. The question now is that now with Geely in the driving seat, can they make a difference? Can they come back to profitability? Can they be an ASEAN auto player?
I think it's a complete failure because it's really about size and magnitude, right? If you have an industrial policy, it must affect the economy. I mean, if you compare the Malaysian auto base with that of Thailand, which did not have a national car, they're doing extremely well in the car sector because they supply to the auto giants. You know, it's a major part of the economy. And if employment is what you want to achieve, if economic benefits is what you want to achieve, then Thailand has done it.
Yeah. If you go to Rayong in southern Thailand, which is the automotive hub for Thailand, you do see almost every car maker there. Toyota is there, their hub is there, Ford is there doing the big pickup trucks. They're very successful on that level. Maybe Thailand's approach was clever. They completely came out and said they're not going to do a national car. Their focus is actually supporting the auto industry, supporting the big players, and then they built up their own supply chain. But I think Malaysia, of course, in the 80s, maybe the approach was trying to do it on their own. And some countries succeeded. I mean, Korea actually started around the same time as we did.
Yeah.
And look at them. I mean, they're one example.
Every single car on the road is a Korean car.
Yeah, I mean, they have succeeded. You know, they make excellent cars, which are accepted globally. Unfortunately, Malaysia, I think we had issues over quality and we just never had scale.
And it's not just that. And I think the conversation evolving surrounding the car is still the same. I mean, back then it was about rebadging. It's understandable. It's new. We have intention to get into the car business. Perhaps it's good to sort of learn and perhaps do a reverse engineering and so forth. But I think we didn't kind of move on from there. We're still rebadging. We're still talking about rebranding. We're not even, you know, we haven't been able to move on from there.
I'm not a big fan of this where what's wrong with rebranding or rebadging, because the cost to start your own vehicle base, right, costs as much as US, I think, 1 to 2 billion for each mark you want to make. Whether you can ever make your money back is a huge question. And auto players actually make such thin margins, and we're talking about 2, 3, 4%. So it's all down to scale. It's all down to economies of scale. If you don't have that and you can't keep your costs low, you can never be an efficient or profitable automaker. So for Malaysia, I think if you rebadge a Geely car and you do it well and you make sure that there's no problems, the after sales is good, the parts are cheap, why not? I think the car has a place in Malaysia.
I think with IR4, 4.0, this is going to be more and more irrelevant because you need to move to new industries. And, one thing we have to be careful about is this whole talk about AirAsia taking over Malaysia Airlines, right? Because Malaysia Airlines is going to suck the bedevils out of our resources. It already has. And if we don't tread carefully on this, the kind of emotional and intellectual support we give to Malaysia Airlines, the more we do that, the more the country will go backwards. I mean, that's my personal opinion. But we will be back with more discussions after this at BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Tracy Chapman with You're the One. You're with The Morning Run, Julian Chowning and Sharts with you. And now it's time to take a look at the front pages of the newspapers and see what's leading the nation this morning.
So we look at the Star's front page. On the top of the page is do your banking online or pay the price. So this is about us moving into moving towards a cashless system, and in that process I think it's going to cost several people, especially who are not tech savvy, or maybe, you know, so when we talk about not tech savvy or those who don't have access to technology, we're talking about perhaps the older generation, even those who can't afford a smartphone. So now it's going to cost them to do things, to do banking manually. So we're going to talk that more extensively on that later. At the same time, something fun, well, they're introducing this tube water slide, which is 1.1 kilometer long, and that's going to be in Teluk Bahang in Penang. So December holiday, get ready for that, at least for me.
And then
right.
For the kids.
You're going to try that, Sharitz?
1.1 kilometer. I don't know how far it's going to go. It's going to, yeah. Sounds fascinating.
I might try that out.
Yeah, I might try that out.
1.1 kilometer.
Nice surrounding.
It's a good way to get from point A to point B. You don't have to take Grab. You just go on that thing, you know, you're 1.1 kilometer away.
You're still in the same park, though.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, well.
It might be the longest 30 seconds of your life, though.
They should have different
stops.
It's going
to take longer than 30 seconds.
They should have different stops on the slide, you know. The slide should, like, branch out and have different stops.
Oh, that is...
So you can get off and have a look at something and get back on the slide.
No, because it is surrounded by forest. I mean, that's I think that's the appeal.
Mm, very cool.
Okay.
Nice.
And then on the Straits Times, we have a picture of a Mark Yong performer. And the story is that Kelantan has actually lifted the ban on Mark Yong, although performers must comply with Shara guidelines. And that's according to the Deputy Menteri Besar. It's after 28 years.
Yeah, so
I would love to go and watch.
You can catch performances in KL.
In KL,
yeah,
okay.
You can go to this website, Pusaka. They promote Mark Yong. I've been to some of them. And although I have to confess, I don't understand the Kelantanese dialect, it is a beautiful performance.
It is. But when they add things like, for example, they have to comply with Sharia guideline, that's when it gets confusing. What is Sharia guideline? In Mak Yong, if you look at the dance, the outfit there itself, I mean, is that going to be Sharia compliant, for example? We have issues with athletes not being Sharia compliant. I mean, so this is where I think culture and religion is going to clash. And I hope, look, it's not going to distort any of the Mak Yong, the authenticity of Mak Yong on its own, you know? So, yeah, interesting.
Yep, I support that idea. Don't disturb the authenticity of Mak Yong. It's a really beautiful dance. On the front page of the Malaysian Reserve, the Bumiputra Economic Action Council CEO, Ahmad Yazid, is asking the government to use the 10 billion ringgit that's meant to buy over the land in Kampung Baru to assist the Bumiputra community instead, right? To have all these programs that could go to them instead of spending the money there in Kampung Baru for a redevelopment exercise. I think that makes sense. I think that makes sense, but I'm not sure if the landowners would want that. They probably want to monetize. So that's going to be a dicey issue. And quote unquote, the government should not use their resources or the public's money on Kampung Baru at the moment. We are having many problems with the economy, especially in home ownership. And we shall be discussing more of this after 7 a.m. But I think that I'm not sure if the government is spending this money on them. It could be the land buyer as well. And also on the sidebar of the Malaysian Reserve, Malaysians are addicted to internet. This is not a news flash to me. I mean, you know, we have been in this addiction for a number of years already.
It's keeping us late, keeping us up late at night as well, isn't it? It's depriving us of some sleep.
But this actually comes from Galen Centre for Health and Social Policy CEO Azrul Mohamad Khalib, which is a very respected commentator on health issues in Malaysia.
Okay, in the Straits Times, actually, there's this interesting article on the second page with regarding asking the question whether the University of Malaysia Terengganu and University Sultan Zainal Abidin, whether a merger could actually work.
A merger of universities.
Yes,
okay,
yeah.
Yep, interesting. All right, extra campuses for the students in those particular universities, if that happens. All right, we're coming up to the 7 a.m. news, and after that, we'll bring you some serious business discussions. And in the meantime, here's Tomorrow Never Knows by The Beatles, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.